Nisa Khan, thank you for joining me in the trenches. When we talk about LED lighting, what are we talking about?
In order to talk about LED lighting, two things we have to realize. One is the artistic side of lighting, day-to-day need for illumination and lighting. And everybody understands light because we see it during the day, and at night we have artificial light. And when it comes to science and mathematics, in modern science that supposedly got started since Galileo, which is not true, and we can get into that a little bit. A great deal of science and mathematics existed thousands of years ago, even before Egypt, and that's in India. And people are finding that out with a lot of evidence now, but let's not go there. But going to Newton and even some of the Greeks that wondered about light, they always got confused about it. And that confusion still exists today in terms of understanding light mechanically, in terms of scientifically, to kind of grab hold of it and figure out what it is and how, if we can recreate it, and our relationship with light. So all those things on the science side. And it turns out, even though we've been taught some science around light in school and universities, it turns out it's mostly wrong. And I didn't realize it for a long time because I came up the same ladder with many people who are educated. I have a PhD in electrical engineering, and my undergraduate or bachelor's degree is in physics and mathematics. And in graduate school, I studied electrical engineering, which is really applied physics in a way. And my concentration was optics or light. And for a long time, all the theories and scientific understanding behind light was, for me, the same as what we were taught in the university, starting from Newton and then electromagnetic radiation science that got developed in the 1800s, going on to the 20th century with quantum mechanics. And now, because of light sciences and engineering, we are able to have this real-time video conversation because it is going through fiber optic cables. So I used to work in that field, and that's what I studied in graduate school. That's what I got my PhD on. And I ended up in probably at the time the world's best research scientific establishment organization, that was Bell Laboratories. So Bell Labs is mostly in New Jersey, but it's really around the world. And now it's owned by Nokia. But back in the old days, it was owned by AT&T, which is a telecommunication company. So after the telecom boom and bust in 1999 and the year 2000, the telecommunication industry went through a huge upheaval. It broke down. It's called the IT bust. The IT is possible. Information technology is possible because of the infrastructure that fiber optics and wireless technologies provide. So when the bottom of the industry pretty much fell out, it went through all sorts of changes, and all these companies were broken up, and some went bankrupt, and others merged. So AT&T's research arm, that not the service company. So there are two ways to look at telecommunication. One is the services. You pay carrier services to get your broadband services, whether it's your cell phone, wireless, or cable TV, or what have you. But behind the services is all the equipment that make it possible for the services to be provided to the end user. So the equipment and the science and the construction, the systems, the part of that when AT&T was broken up in 1995, it went to a company called Lucent Technologies. So Lucent merged with Alcatel, which is a French company of doing the same kinds of things. And then from Alcatel, Nokia merged and it took the name Nokia. So it really, the roots of Nokia, it's now called Nokia Bell Labs, but it really was AT&T Bell Labs. So now the whole world is about wireless and cell phones and smartphones. And so it became very software oriented and very service oriented. And the equipment went ahead of itself in a way that you don't need that much of a huge establishment to work on equipment anymore because it's already fairly mature. Now people work on display technology so that you and I can have a good video output and so forth. But it's all connected to basically communication technologies that started at AT&T. And it started with somebody, an immigrant from Scotland named Alexander Graham Bell, and hence the name Bell Laboratories. So I was there working on optical technologies, on systems based on lasers and laser light going into fibers, and then controlling the information inside the fibers so that information can be bundled, whether it's data, picture, text, what have you, real-time video, audio. You bundle all that information digitally, coding them with ones and zeros, and you send them off to fiber. And light traveling very, very fast, and the information traveling very, very fast on a light frequency or a carrier. This is how information is transferred, distributed, and provided to the end user. Now, the end user part has changed quite a bit because of the wireless technologies, because people love their smartphone that they can go anywhere with and be connected to the internet, and they can take photos, they can use it as a phone, you can use it as a computer. So all these technologies are possible because mostly what some of us did in Bell Labs for decades leading up to the year 2000 and beyond. So basically, then I was an optics person, very well versed in optical technologies and sciences. And in 2006, almost 2007, I had a detour. I had a detour even before that. In 2001, I had decided, because I was in such high advanced place doing sciences like Bell Labs, and when the industry bottom fell out, I still needed to be challenged, and I didn't want to work on the same thing because we were already many decades ahead of many other people in terms of research. And since the industry sort of disappeared, or its clout disappeared, the intensity, the rigorousness and in the amount of research work and engineering work that goes into it, it sort of took a big break. And then I decided, I wanted to find out what caused the 2000 boom that was, you know, it was making many people rich. And then the market sort of crashed, and the market crashed. It's called the dot-com boom and bust. That's what it's called. So I decided to find out what finance was all about. So that's part of my profession now. I have been in finance. I did work for a Fortune 100 company for 5 years. And then I decided to go independent with financial work. And at the same time, I decided, since I'm independent and I have my own office shop, if you will, why not do science at the same time? Because I had spent decades going to school and decades working in that such high technology field. So why not do it? It's my passion, too. So I built up a lab by myself, and that led to writing the book that is now an advanced textbook around the world. In order to do that, I had to learn lighting, and I quickly recognized lighting or illumination science is very different from optics and optical sciences. And the main difference was that optics was always the way it was used before. Actually, optics came from lighting, and they separated itself because there was so much to do with just optics, and that led to fiber optics communication. So the entire 20th century, they worked on masers and lasers. Maser is basically a microwave laser. It's the same type of scientific device, engineering device, but it works at a different frequency. It works in microwave frequencies or wireless frequencies as opposed to light frequencies that are known as the optical sciences. But the two fields are very related. They both have to do with electromagnetic radiation. So the entire 20th century, optics focused on, display came on later, and there's fabulous science and engineering in display, as you can see. It's amazing what these cameras and video cameras can do, and they're so small, and the resolution and the color are so rich and complex and wonderful and so real. So display is flat. And optical fiber sciences is also flat because it's confined in a pipe, right? Fiber is a strand of pipe-like thing, and light going in there and coming out of it is coming out of a facet that is a two-dimensional facet, okay? So all the science and mathematics, all these great places ever did was in two dimensions, and I'm so happy to be talking to a cartoonist because the cartoon world is a two-dimensional world. So you'll be able to follow me what I'm trying to say. So two-dimensional work is more sophisticated and the work is harder than one dimensions, of course. But going into three dimensions, it's a whole different world, right? So the equivalent of your cartoons becoming 3D is the animation that we know, right? You really have to build models, and models have to be three-dimensionals, and they have to move around and do the same things you're explaining in cartoons. Now, you own the cartoon world, and I've looked at your cartoons. They're wonderful. But they're still 2D. And what happens when you go from this cartoon world to a three-dimensional analog of it? How do we know it's 3D? Can you tell me a little bit about it, since you're an artist?
Well, if it's 3D, I'm guessing you'd be able to interact with it sideways, at the back, underneath, on top.
That's one aspect. So motion is one aspect. But a black and white photo or a cartoon on a piece of paper, but we can make 3D come alive on a piece of paper. Forget the motion for a little bit. How do we make a three-dimensional picture come alive on 2D? Shading, right? Shading and color. But even with shading, in black and white shading, you can make something look three-dimensional. One is perspective, the other one is shading. So light is the same thing. So if you now talk about shading, where does that shading thing come from that we understand? It's coming from light. That's why artists understand lighting way better than modern scientists do. I found out all the optics that I was doing in at the university, which is, you know, very prestigious place for academia and this kinds of things, and then at Bell Labs, very prestigious. But they all worked in 2D, and they never really knew what lighting is all about. And when I came into the lighting industry, and I made a conscious decision to come into the lighting industry because I had the background in lasers and I wanted to do some research that other people didn't do before. I wanted to do discoveries of things other people didn't do before. So background that I have that I was world famous for is semiconductors that I studied in university, and lasers are made from semiconductors. They can be made out of other materials that are not semiconductors, but the most efficient and the most versatile ones are from semiconductors that the lasers are made from. And same with LEDs. You can make LEDs from plastic type material called polymers. But again, semiconductor LEDs are a lot more versatile, and they are high volume manufacturable and all sorts of things. So when I wanted to go into a new field of science and engineering, I looked into what semiconductors could do. And I had the option of going into doing solar panels and solar technology and LED. And then I did my research with solar, and I found out that field has become quite mature. And it's about just manufacturing them in a little bit more efficient way. And I didn't want to do this incremental science of incremental improvement. And I thought LED lighting, maybe that's something there that could be interesting. So I actually educated myself for the first time all about lighting. And I educated myself in a way, it turned out that because of the dedication and the courses that I went to, everywhere all the light conferences offered and all the light books, handbooks ever written, over 100 years, I read them all. And it basically boils down to two differentiations between optics that the prestigious world knew and what lighting is. And that's 2D versus 3D. Optical sciences, all about just doing a problem in two dimensions. But lighting, you cannot do, if you want to do good lighting and good illumination, you have to solve a three-dimensional problem. And that turns out to be something that nobody realizes. Nobody at Harvard, MIT, Oxford, nobody realizes that going into a problem, a technical problem to do for lighting and optics in three dimensions require a mathematics that not even Newton knew, not even Gauss knew. And then I struggled trying to publish something that I thought was huge in terms of explaining how LED lighting works and why it looks so awful versus other lights. People think if you tweak this here and tweak that, add a little bit yellow because it's too whitish and too bluish, everything will be okay. It is not about adding some chemical or adding even a lens or a reflector to fix LED light. LED lighting cannot be fixed for a very fundamental reason, that it is light that is very different from the sun, and it is light that's very different from fire.
Yes, I think I'm seeing where you're going with this. What you're talking about is a paradigm shift, because the sun or a fire are three-dimensional sources of light, while the LED light, for example, that's right here in front of me is flat.
Yes, so LED light comes out of these semiconductor chips that are flat. So if you take your cell phone apart, the antenna part that receives signals and it transmits signals so that you can be connected to the web and you can do all sorts of things with your smartphone, these are flat chips and you cannot bend them. If you try to bend them, they will crumble and they will become dust. So these are called wafers. So in the semiconductor industry, wafers are the flattest thing humans have ever discovered. People dedicated their entire profession, entire PhD, for decades, 30, 40 years, in making artificial semiconductor materials that are extremely flat. They're flat even at the sub-nano scale. And this is where the light is generated, and this is where the light is coming from. And that even the Nobel Prize winners in lasers and in other fields, in microwaves, they did not realize the minute they created the laser and the maser, which is the microwave laser, it's microwave amplification stimulated emission radiation. That's what the maser acronym stands for. A laser is the light amplification stimulated emission radiation. When they created the laser, they didn't recognize what made it possible to create a laser. So the very first laser was not this monochromatic, really single frequency, single color. It was a little bit broad. It's something we call monochromatic. So it's red or it's blue, but it's a little washed out blue. So what makes it even strong blue, something artists or in the display field, they call it saturated color. That means it's just one single color and not much else of it. So the thing about nature is that there is no point, there's no one single value. This is why artists get nature and science even better than scientists, because it's a blend. It's always a connected world. Look at your cartoons. Are they a bunch of dots? They're not. They're beautiful lines creating characters, creating pictures, and they're not dots. You can't do anything with dots. You have to connect the dots to create, and dots always need to be connected, and they mostly need to be curved. So with straight lines, you cannot communicate very much, especially to humans. We're not straight people.
Why does it matter?
Yes, it matters because everything goes back to the sun. The sun used to be treated, or still is treated, as sun god. There is a reason for that. So nowadays, the concept of God is kind of very light, you know. But God is a caretaker, is a creator of all, if you want to express somebody that we feel like that gave us life. And I'm not talking religion here. Religion, again, if you go back to Indian culture, there is no such word as religion. It's dharma. Dharma means ways of life. And dharma gave both what we call spirituality, and dharma also gave science, and it also gave us mathematics. And the way dharma, way of life, gave science and mathematics is you notice nature, the way nature's laws work. And if you can understand nature's laws, and when do you understand that everything is fitting together? It's an idea called convergence. So anybody can come up with any theory and say it works here and it works there, and then all of a sudden in a new situation it doesn't work. Then you say the theory doesn't work in all situations. But one way to verify how everything works is to actually figure out how the sun works. So the sun is a beautiful sphere, and it is sufficiently far away that the light coming out of it, when it comes to us, is very, very stable. It's stable in terms of frequency, and it's stable in terms of where it is in our atmosphere, meaning zones and space. And it is all pretty much even. It is not fluttering. It's not jumping up and down. White light is like white noise. It stays in the background, and it is calm. It's not shooting in the eye or anything. You feel very comfortable when you go out in the sun. And so if you trace back how the light is coming out of the sun, they are little rays. And the rays, unfortunately, Western science got developed with ideas of points and arrows, as if point does not have any dimensions and arrow does not have any width. Real life is not like that. If you want to create something, it will have different sides. It will have some surface, and it is what we call something finite. So the idea about understanding science and art and reality and how it affects us all with scientific or nature's laws is to understand how light is coming out of the sun. And it turns out this, see, all of this Western science and mathematics, they all have laws associated with them. And they have, the laws are named after human beings. And that was a mistake. And it's not a mistake. I think it was a scheme. We have Newton's laws. Newton is a household name, right? And then we have Gauss's law. Gauss is not a household name, but Gauss, the name of Gauss is huge in mathematics and huge in physics. Anybody studying physics and mathematics at the university level will have to encounter Gauss. And after studying, understanding lighting and figuring out how LED lighting works and how it's different from a light source like the sun or fire, you have to get down to the basics. And it's like, oh, Gauss's law explains it. Calculus explains it. So I wrote a paper. It finally got published. Now it's a very important paper for everybody, but they're still trying to figure it out. And not everything, even the best professors in the world can, or math and physics can figure it out because they don't have the right background in calculus. Calculus is only taught a few years at the university, and then they drop it like a hot potato, never use it again. Why? Because Newton was given the credit to have come up with calculus. Newton himself didn't understand calculus. Now you can find all of this. People are going back to how much math and science were there in India, in Bharat. It's basically why the Europeans came to India, which the original name is Bharat. Is because of math and science, but we were all told a lie. We were all told it's indigo and it's spices. Well, think about spices. I left Bangladesh when I was 15, and I've been in the US ever since. I'm now 58 years old, so it's 43 years I've been here. I went to university here and graduate school, and I've been working here. I'm a US citizen. And the first thing I noticed as a 15-year-old, you know, we were told Europeans came to India because of spices. I'm like, why is the food so bad? I was very close friends with my college friends in the Midwest where I went to college. And it was an international college where we had so many other Europeans. I had friends that are born and raised in America. And the idea of spices and food was so minimal. It's like if the Europeans came to India for spices, how come the food is so bad? Nowadays, food is very good in Europe, but not in the 80s. Maybe French, but that's different. But now spices are very popular and people are finally learning. But if they were there for that many years, hundreds of years, and this is why they came to India, they don't know food, they don't know spices. So obviously that was a flag, but I didn't, you know, it's like I didn't have time to think about these things. India had all sorts of math and science way, way before Pythagoras, before Archimedes. In fact, Archimedes went to India and learned from there. And all of the history is now coming out, but they're only believable if they come out of Oxford and Cambridge. Well, Oxford and Cambridge are rewriting some of the articles Indians wrote 20 years ago, and I know who wrote these, and I have worked with them. So I know a lot about history of physics and science, Ayurveda and mathematics, and how far they go back in India. But coming back to giving Newton the credit for calculus, giving Newton the credit for Newton's laws of motion, Newton's laws of gravity, these just are not true. And I can now see why they're not true, because Newton could not have come up with these laws, particularly the law of gravity, because it requires one to understand calculus inside and out, and calculus not in one dimensions, not in two dimensions, in three dimensions, but not in box coordinates called Cartesian coordinates named after Descartes, which is you only have X, Y, Z. With only X, Y, Z, even Einstein used X, Y, Z coordinates to solve his general relativity problem. There is the problem. You cannot solve a curved space dive problem with an X, Y, Z coordinate system, which is only straight. These are only boxes. Now, you're an artist. If I have a sphere, can I completely fill this up with squares inside? Will it work?
No, because you'll need to keep creating smaller and smaller squares.
Right. So smaller and smaller squares, still it'll never get there. Okay? So when light, water, air come out of objects, the way they come out depends on the shape of the object. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. So what you're saying is that the light that's emitted from the sun covers all of that ground, but light that comes out of, let's say, a light bulb or an LED doesn't. It will always be missing those little pieces.
Yeah. So it turns out that today in mainstream science and mathematics, you will not find in mainstream a single professor, whether Cambridge, Oxford, MIT, they understand analytic calculus, which is continuous, not holes. Continuous calculus in 3D in curved coordinate system, and there are three main curved coordinate system. One is called a spherical coordinate system, and the other one is called cylindrical, and the third one is called polar. Polar is basically spherical, but only in 2D, okay? So what happens is that if, forget light, because we can't see light. Light provides us illumination, but you don't see light rays, do you? You don't see light rays. You see the light source if it's strong enough. If the brightness of the source is strong enough, you will see it. But when the light is emitted from a source in the atmosphere, you see no light because what you see is illumination, correct? Do you follow me?
Well, I mean, you can see a laser. You can see a laser.
You see the source. Just keep things simple. You see a laser. Looking at the source is not the same as seeing illumination. Illumination is the light now in space. Okay? When you look at a laser or even a sun in broad daylight, a sunny day, you'll see this disk in the sky. You see a disk because we can't see the back of the sun because our vision is this cone vision that covers what's in front of us inside the cone, not behind. But we all know the sun is a sphere, at least for us humans. If you're a different human with different sensitivity, maybe not five senses, but 20 senses, maybe you'll see a different world. Let's not go there. For us, the world that we know, it is real. It's not illusionary or anything. We have limited senses, that's for sure, but it is real. And we see the other side of the sun in a different season. But sun is a sphere, and we can prove that. So forget illumination for a second, because as now I've demonstrated to you that you don't see illumination, you see the source. You don't see light rays. In a very strong flashlight or very strong LED light, sometimes from a certain angle, you'll see some burst of light rays, but you don't see all of the light rays the way they are in reality. So let's go to water. I take a water balloon. A balloon is spherical, let's assume. And suppose the surface of the rubber balloon is strong enough that even if you put a hole in it, it won't burst and break into pieces. And if the water coming out of the balloon has strong enough force that it comes out with, if the water is released via a tiny little hole in the balloon, it comes out straight up. Agree? Until gravity takes off and then straight up, now then falls down. It comes out straight up, and the higher the force of the water, the straighter it's going to be. Agree? Okay. Well, light works the same way, and it is Gauss's law that, unfortunately and sadly, I haven't found a single electrical engineer, physicist, or mathematician who understood this basic Gauss's law, Gauss being so important. Why? Because it wasn't Gauss who invented it. They just labeled it as Gauss, and they told everyone, Gauss was so smart, Newton was so smart, you're lucky to work with their laws, don't ask any questions. Nobody understands it, but these are good, and they work as recipes. But a simple, plainer, linguistic explanation of what this law just is, I could not find anybody in the peer review committee, anybody. My husband, who is an electrical engineer from Germany, he was there with me at Bell Labs. All my professors, bosses, Nobel Prize winners, nobody can explain to me in plain English or plain any language what this actually means. All it means is that when energy substance, any substance with energy is allowed to be released from a bounded source, stuff that's inside that comes out, at the surface, it comes straight out. And in mathematical language, coming straight out of the surface means it is making a right angle to the surface. We call it orthogonal. And you probably know that, being a cartoonist, you can draw in a piece of paper. Let's see. Do you see this line here that I drew? So coming straight out from a line is another line that straight out. Do you see the arrow? Okay. So what it's doing to the line at the base is there is a 90 degrees angle here. Do you see that? This is Gauss's law. So if the surface is flat, anything that is allowed to be released from there would come straight out from only there's flat surface, so the only one way it can come out is straight out. And that is why LEDs are directional. Now, you're gonna find out what kind of an artist I am, because since you're a good artist, I'm gonna try to keep up with you. So let's go to 2D. Surface, would you agree with me? Okay. So, from the 2D surface, if I take a position, you see that? From a flat sheet of paper, I just drew another flat sheet of paper. So within the flat sheet of paper, I just choose an area, choose a zone, I drew a line. And anything that comes out of it would be straight up, okay? Now, any point that you choose within the piece of paper that I drew would also all be coming out, all pointing straight up, correct? Now, now I drew a curved surface. Would you agree? Okay. So in the curved surface now, what are the possibilities of straight up at different points? They are all now going, thank you. So when it comes to sphere, too many people I find, even technical, even PhDs in math and physics, they all say, let's cover all angles. That's 360. Oh, 360 covers all angles. Really? 360 doesn't cover all angles. 360 covers all angles if you are living in a cartoon world on a flat, all you have is a 2D, right? So if I in a flat surface, you can draw circles. In a flat surface, you cannot draw a sphere. So a circle now How many angles are there? 360. Now, if you come off the world of this flat sheet of paper, how many 360s do I have? Many, many, many. And how do I do that? How do I solve that problem? In a 3D world, when substance comes out in a 3D world from a 3D structure, it is not a line anymore. It's a cone. Do you follow me? From one point, if you notice the way the water comes out, it is straight. The middle is straight, but it is trying to form a cone.
So if you don't mind, what is the practical application of this?
Is to understand Gauss's law in 3D in the way light or water or anything is released from the source. So the sun is spherical for a good reason, and the sun is the 93 million miles or whatever it is, the distance from us is far away. Exact distance is there for a reason. You don't find life, you know, they claim all these aliens these days, but life exists on Earth because of the distance between the sun and the Earth and the way the sunlight is released from the sphere of the sun and the way it comes and fills our atmosphere. Let's not go there. So the practical application is to realize when substance is coming out of the source, how does it come out? And when it comes out, sun now has infinitely many of these little holes in it. All the light is now coming out. And each of them is a cone. So the math gets difficult, but in a simple term, these tiny little cone in a mathematical language, we call it infinitesimal. Infinitesimal cone in a perfect sphere never overlaps. They're all in different directions. And in 3D, if you want to cover all different directions, it's not 360, as I just said. It is has to be a concept of a solid angle, like an ice cream cone. Ice cream cone filled with ice cream, it has to be solid. Now you take that cone and you move that in all different solid angle around, then you cover all space. And all of these little cones coming out of the sun never overlaps. And each ray contains all the colors, not just the colors we see in a rainbow color, but beyond. And that is beautiful white light. That is healthy white light. And that light has to be 93 million miles away from us, from the source, to be healthy on Earth. So two things, the distance from this sphere, as well as what this light is contained, good white light that we're supposed to consume. Illumination is a consumption, just like good water you're supposed to drink. You can't drink bad water. Good air you're supposed to breathe. You can't breathe bad air. So everything else is pollution. Water can be polluted. Air can be polluted. Light can be polluted. Light can be polluted. And when is light polluted? Light is polluted when it's not pure white light. And pure white light at night is the fire. Nature gave us fire, which is very different from the sun, but there are some similarities. Why? Because it's dark around. If you bring a source close to you, have you ever gone camping, sat next to a fire? You're sitting next to a light source. You are right next to it. You can never sit that close to the sun. Therefore, any light source that we create on Earth got to be at night, and that light is something that we can tolerate. Firelight, unless you sit too close and burn yourself, is not light pollution. It's good light. Everybody knows.
But a cell phone light would be cell phone pollution.
Yeah, I mean, if you're burning the wrong things and creating, if you burn wood and you don't do it too much, if you do anything, if you do good things too much, that's also pollution. So let's...
Now, what I'm asking is, so for example, you're saying that like the torch on your cell phone, that's light pollution.
Yes. So how does it work? Now, it is in my book, and this diagram is now very famous. Let's imagine doing this experiment, and you can do it by yourself. You take like a wire so that you can bend it, a metal wire, okay? In the metal wire, you can attach ice cream cones, okay? Somehow find a way to attach the ice cream cones in the wire. So if you take a wire about this big and ice cream cones are about that big, let's say you could put 5 in there with some space in between. You can create that. Now, if you bend the wire, as you said before, the cones will go in all different directions. If you straighten out the wire, these cones will overlap. Now, in practical experiment, in practical demonstration, these cones cannot be placed too close together to do the demonstration, but you get the idea. If they're fairly close together, if you take a wire this big and you put, let's say, 20 cones, and you bend the wire like this, and all these cones will go different direction, and they will not fall on top of each other. As soon as you straighten out the wire, you will see some overlap. So when you do that, when there is overlap now, there is very, very strong overlap with the laser, and there is also quite strong overlap with the LED because they're both flat. Okay? And the other thing is that when you now, this is where calculus comes in. Calculus, you probably know, I mean, if you haven't studied it, a lot of people who studied it will say it's a lot of differentiating, taking derivatives and integrating. Have you heard the two, differentiating and integrating? That's what calculus is. Well, differentiating is that differentiating two objects or two things, whatever they are. Integrating is putting them together. We understand the language, right? So calculus comes in where we have to now, each cone containing radiation inside, light radiation, right? We're now going back to the sun. Sun rays come out. Rays are not really pointy. They have some width. And to do the calculus, we take the smallest element. We call it infinitesimal. They're tiny little cones. In a perfect sphere, these tiny little cones will never overlap. And each of the cone contains the same light as every other cone. And now we're trying to create light out of a flat surface. And again, light substance are in a cone. You get all the cone overlapping. And to get the total radiation in front of it, radiation or light substance that creates the illumination in front of it, to get the total, you need to integrate what's inside the cone all over. When you do that math, you get a very strange light pattern. This strange light, what is light? Light is actually electromagnetic radiation moving in space and time. That's all it is. It's electromagnetic radiation or ether moving in space and time. So if you create light from a flat surface, what you end up doing is all the cones are now overlapped. You add them up. This is when you need calculus. That Newton didn't know, neither does anybody from professor from Oxford or MIT. And I can't even teach them because they were tainted being, you know, you can't be Newton, you can't be that smart. So even though everything I'm saying is very easy and I can teach those people very easily, it is the psyche that they never learned how to do calculus properly. You add them up in 3D, not in Cartesian coordinates, not what stupid Descartes did, but in spherical coordinates. It's a little bit hard, but I've done the problem. I've given all the solutions. You end up with this strange radiation pattern that is the opposite of sun's radiation pattern it produces on Earth. It's harmful from two things. First of all, as I said, sun's radiation includes all frequencies all the rainbow colors plus the other stuff. The other stuff we're not sensitive to, we don't see. But they need to be there for our health. They need to be there. Just trust me on this. Infrared light that we don't see is good for us. It provides us heat. Ultraviolet, if you don't overdo it, it's also good for vision, developing vision for little children. So in any case, that light is very good light in 3D zone space illumination where we live in atmosphere, because of by the time that cone all integrated far away, it becomes even and the same zonal thing everywhere. Not much difference. You can go take a light meter and measure on a bright sunny day. Everything about all the different colors and the intensity, it's pretty even. If you could measure light, which is, you know, electromagnetic radiation and very, very moving in space and time, very, very fast. If you could measure all the frequency components of what comes out of laser and LED, it is gonna go bonkers. And guess what? Our brain is the most sophisticated thing, not just our brain, our entire biological construction. A human, or maybe any other species as well, not that different. It is a marvel of nature in terms of what we are detecting. It is also natural, second nature. We don't pay attention to it. You hear light and sound the same, even though somebody says light travels at the speed of light, which is much faster than the sound. But how we take it in, light and sound are coming to us at the same rate, at the same everywhere. If not, we'd go out of sync. I'm just taking two major frequencies and say, if it weren't simultaneous, we would go crazy. Now, there are so many other different colors and frequency components moving, electromagnetic radiation moving in space and time. If they are strong enough, and if they create a bizarre pattern so that all these different frequencies are present in appreciable quantity, in substantive quantity, even if you don't understand it because of your five senses, your brain does. Your brain is freaking out looking at an LED light because your neurons are trying to now make sense of things that are berserk in space and time. It's like doing this. And every flat radiator will do the same thing. Now, there are people who are epileptic and light sensitive. If the light moves too fast, they go crazy. They start vomiting and go into epileptic seizure, thrashing on the floor. I know these people. They have written plenty of letters to me that LED lighting is making them immediately sick. They don't even have to open their eyes. That means there's sensors on your body that feels this bad light pollution. Light, again, is activity of ether in space and time. And if that activity has a bazillion different frequencies and the frequencies are changing within the zone that we live in, you're gonna go crazy. And the worst case of LED light is when the intensity is the most, because then it is amplifying all other light activity, radiation activity in space that much more. So LED headlight is making people crazy around the world. And there is a organization in England, I believe, called Light Aware. And they have done studies recently saying that in the last couple of years, there are more and more complaints, and they believe the survey that they've done, more than 80%, like 85% of the people are saying these LED headlights are just ruining their lives. They're horrible. And it'll be soon 99 to 100% where all people are gonna complain. And there's probably not much the authorities are doing because they don't measure it right. They don't understand it. It's partly business, partly some other nasty scheme, people are imposing on us. But that light coming out of LED, creating it that way, is the worst thing you can do to a human being or any species or even plants. And I know the science and mathematics of it. Newton didn't, Einstein didn't. Today's mainstream university professors, best labs in the world, Samsung, Apple, you name it, they don't understand it. They don't want to learn it, because the minute they start learning, they're going to have to dump their old education on calculus and physics and understand the way calculus and physics were done in the 4th century after Christ by an Indian scientist named Aryabhatta. Aryabhatta was the head of a university called Nalanda University in India now. And that university was burned down to the ground by a Muslim fighter, soldier, leader named Bhaktiar Khilji. So this is worse than the library in Alexandria getting burnt down. But you cannot destroy a culture entirely. And this is where growing up in Bengal, Bengali being my first language, which is directly connected to Sanskrit, in the way the language is, in the way the culture is, in the way we understood light and math and science were different. And I didn't pay attention to it until I didn't have to. And when I had to was when I started to do LED lighting.
So essentially, it's harmful to have LED lights shining on you, even though you might not think so. Your brain is freaking out.
Yeah.
How do you solve that problem?
You can't. You can't. And I don't know how to explain this in layman's term, but it goes back to mathematics. And it goes back to physics. And again, this math and physics is known in the modern mathematics and physics world in theories that people don't understand, but they uphold Joseph Louis Fourier, this French mathematician. Just use Fourier transforms, but you don't have to understand what it says because you'll never be as smart as Fourier. Fourier transforms are used in the audio industry, in video industry, degaussing a signal to get, like you, before we came on the screen, you had to optimize and you had to get high definition. Behind all of that is these Fourier mathematics and Gauss mathematics and Euler mathematics. And because I really dug into the math, physics, and science of all this, I also found out Fourier didn't discover Fourier transforms. He didn't understand it. And how does one fix it? So there is, once you create some substance in nature that is unnatural, if you do one particular thing, you can never change it. And the math and physics of it is described by Fourier transforms. So every engineer, electrical engineer, knows what a Fourier transform is. But if I ask them, why is it true? Why does Fourier transform work? None of them gives me any answer. Because they don't know how it was derived and invented. We have to go back how all these things were derived and invented and why. Not just invented, it, how these mathematical and physical description laws have a one-to-one correspondence with nature's laws. We have to go back what Fourier transform is actually saying about nature. So what it is basically, if I can try to explain it in natural terms, there is a reason why nature starts creation from a star called the sun, and the sun has to be spherical, and the sun has to be a certain distance away from where life is created. So Fourier transform is something like what comes out of the source and what is distributed over here And that has to be a white light. So if you take Fourier transform of white noise, you get white noise back. But how does white noise get created? It comes out of a small, what they call point source. It's really a spherical source far away. Then you create this nice white thing that in the atmosphere that we can live. So Fourier transform of this point-like thing so far away, 93 million miles or whatever it is far away, creates straight flat box of zone light that is all the same within the box. Inside your house, if you have built a bigger house, it's more or less the same. That is Fourier transform. The light has to come from a sphere so far away. Now, if you take the Fourier transform of this LED flat thing that our laser flat thing you talked about, the cone, when I add up, do the calculus on it, I told you there's a strange light pattern. This strange light pattern on the surface is a Gaussian. In 3D zone is a Lambertian. Who the hell is Lambert? Lambert is Johann Lambert from Switzerland. He didn't even know Lambert's law, but it is again given to him. He's a saint. Don't ask what Lambert law means. Don't ask how Lambert stumbled upon Lambert's law, but it is his law. Let's just use it. Nobody knows what that means. So this strange light pattern is a Lambertian, and a projection of it on a 2D surface is a Gaussian. If you create that pattern, if you take the Fourier transform of it, no matter how far you go, no matter what you do to it, you will never change it. That is mathematics. And that is mathematics that has to come from understanding how the sun works. There is a scientific book in India, ancient India, that everybody copied from, entire Europe copied from, and they didn't tell you. Now we have Oppenheimer movie. Oppenheimer learned from Bhagavad Gita. What the hell did he know about Bhagavad Gita? What the hell these people know about Upanishad? Schrodinger supposedly learned things from Upanishad. Really? Upanishad is based on Surya Siddhanta. Surya Siddhanta means Surya is the sun. Siddhanta is decision. Something decided by the sun is science, not stupid quantum mechanics.
The best source of light, therefore, needs to be 3D and not 2D, which is artificial. Thus, fire, candles, those sorts of natural lights are obviously optimal for human health.
The most natural light close to us as a source, again, at the beginning of any lighting science, you need to separate the source from the illumination it generates. They're not the same. As you say, well, I can see a laser. You can see the laser source. You don't see illumination from it. So if we are to create light source, it has to be fire. That's why the incandescent light that works almost like fire is quite nice. It's still not as nice as fire or a candle. Everybody knows that. It's way better than LED, and it's because of all these cones. There are no huge cone overlaps in 3D zonal space from an tungsten coil than a flat surface aggregating, generating bazillion, billion little cones, and they're all overlapping and adding up in the middle, making it directional, just like water coming out of. If you ever create a balloon, which is hard to do, that rather than a sphere, but it's kind of like a flat, boat, rubber flat boat filled inside water, and the water had enough energy to come out. These, flat boats that float on water, and if you let the water come out, they all come out straight out. If the water has enough force to come out that way, they don't go in all different directions. So it absolutely matters how substance is coming out of the source itself. And you know, if you believe in nature or God, any which way you want to describe it, nature is there for real. You know, I think we can agree on that. I'm not here to make anybody religious. I'm not religious myself, but I am dharmic. I believe in dharma. That is the way of nature, way of life. I'm not here to turn anybody into a God-believing person. But nature's laws, and at the fundamental level, we cannot change them. You cannot create another human being, no matter how hard you try with these robots and artificial intelligence. Going back to 2D and 3D, and you mentioned difference between 2D and 3D is motion, and you're absolutely right. So if artificial intelligence and transhuman and robots are being created, what can they do? So you create this 3D, you create this 3D machine called a robot, or that could look like a human. You know, technology is so advanced that it's possibly someday, if they are creating an artificial robot that looks exactly like Jeremy or exactly like me, it's no, in 3D, not on paper, in 3D with real material and stuff, right? They can create it and they can give it motion. Arms could move and they exist already. You know, you go to restaurants and you're being now served by these R2-D2-like machines come and bring you food and stuff like that. And this R2-D2-type machine could very well look like you someday. But it is still not human in the sense of how you may think you have five senses. And in most of reality, you do. But you actually have infinite senses and you have simultaneity. You actually detect your system, the entire biological system knows everything about all frequency, all space, all things, everything. And it is coming out in different ways. In the way you feel when you go out in the sun, all of a sudden you feel different and different thoughts and memories come to you. It's all because you are everything. You are everything and you sense everything. And all the knowledge and everything about nature is already within you. And that is the part that can never be duplicated if we create it. Because we were created, for example, by the sun 93 million miles away. And the Fourier transform of what comes out of the sun is in a particular manner filling our spatial zone that we live in. With all the senses, if we look at the sun, if we look at the moon, before science and mathematics come into a human being, you know how to sense it all. You know how to feel it. You know how to draw it. You know the difference between a bad drawing and a good drawing. You don't have to be a scientist or a mathematician to do that. So that human being, that species, natural species, cannot be duplicated by things that we make, otherwise known as inorganic. Inorganic. Semiconductor LEDs, semiconductor lasers are also known as inorganic materials, man-made. Man-made stuff can do wonders. We have all the technology and they're also bad for us, but they provide us a lot of convenience if we use them right. But whatever we create is never going to create a natural human being in the sense of what we can really sense, understand, feel, and everything.
Nisa Khan, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you, Jeremy. It's been very good talking with you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportjerm.com.